Welcome to Electric Evolution with Liz Allen. This podcast is about the journey to a more sustainable future in order for us to be able to do our bit to achieve net zero. I'll be discussing a variety of topics with experts in their field in order to educate and increase our knowledge of clean energy, electric vehicles, and the electric vehicle infrastructure. So whether you're an individual wanting to make a difference at home, a small business, or a corporate, this podcast is just for you. So on today's podcast episode, and I'll try third time lucky to say, Chris Chamberlain, he is the Vice President and co-founder of Dodona Analytics. Good to meet you, Chris. Thank you.
Thank you, Liz. Thank you for inviting along today. I'm looking forward to the session, and hopefully some people will find it insightful as well.
Of course, definitely. So we met at Fully Charged through one of your colleagues who pounced on me whilst I was eating a flapjack or something, weren't they? That was quite funny.
Yeah, Junaid, he seems to have this facial recognition where he can pick people out of crowds based upon their LinkedIn photos, which is a nice skill, seeing as people seem to have a LinkedIn photo that's at least 10 years old, in my experience.
No, mine's not 10 years old. It's only last year, but you know. Sometimes I have curly hair, sometimes I have straight hair. Just depends what mood I'm in. But no, listen, it was...
Mine's always grey.
Oh, under this love, mine's grey, but I'm not telling you anymore. So, right, tell me a bit about Dodona and what is your background and what does Dodona do?
Yeah, so my personal background is I've worked in technology sales, and although I've got a grand title, I'm basically working sales. But at the moment, I tend to deal with some of the larger accounts that we're working with. So as an organisation, we're data scientists. We worked in a number of different industries like insurance and publishing and also medical and things like that. And yeah, about 3.5 years ago, we started speaking to our first customer in this space. And yeah, they came to us and said, yeah, we've just taken over the EV charging infrastructure. The company's called Iduna or BEV. And they've just taken over the public charging infrastructure for Transport for Greater Manchester. And they'd signed up to, provisioning EV chargers for the metropolitan area. And they were like, great, we've won the business. Okay, what do we do next? It wasn't quite as bad as that, but they needed some help as planning where the next kind of tranche of charging infrastructure was going to go. And the more that we and they delved into that problem, it became clear that there was a need for having a lot of data, as much evidence as possible, because this is a forward-looking market, to make sure that it was, you understood as much as possible about the something that was unknown in order to get that to look reasonable in the future and show that you'd thought about it and there was some evidence rather than putting equidistant pins on that.
Yeah, because I suppose working in continuous improvement, we've been, I've always been told data's king, isn't it?
Yeah, it is continuous improvement. And I think, where it is today and where it will be in 5 years, 10 years, it's going to be very, very different. But sometimes it is a bit like the Wild West out there.
So you said to me before we started recording, you sell a dream.
Yeah, I think, hopefully we can make that dream a reality, or that's the idea. But, initially, because it's kind of intangible, and we do, we have a platform that, helps people be able to visualize things. But, I think, we're at the beginning of this kind of EV journey at the moment that we all need to do. Otherwise, unless you live on a hill, you're going to have a nice swimming pool or moat around your house. So I think, we need to do something. It needs to happen now, and it needs to happen fairly quickly. So kind of sitting on our hands for another years or even months it shouldn't really be an option. So that's what we're trying to do is to say, look, how can you do this at scale? How are the assets going to be in the right place to serve the community and also the local businesses?
And what systems do you use? So how do you generate the data then?
So we take the data from a number of sources, some of which we pay for the data because publicly the data's not available, mm-hmm. or you're taking data from, you know, the census, from, you know, car density, EV density, all of those kinds of things. And then, you know, that those are layers that can be interrogated individually and you can look at them in isolation. But where it really starts to become powerful is that we use, you know, AI or data science principles to combine those together in the right kind of way in order to be able to, you know, make sense of it and press a button and the answer comes back to you. That's the idea, to be able to quantify it, because gut feel, unfortunately, doesn't scale. There's,
well, I've got a bit of a thing about AI. So how advanced is AI for this then?
Oh, there's a lot of AI about at the moment, yeah. Some of which is good, some of which is bad. And yeah,
tell me what you think's bad. What's bad?
I think, you know, this is the first time that computers or machines have the ability to be able to think independently without necessarily, you know, a human giving someone a prompt.
Yeah.
And I think that unleashing that has the potential to, you know, and I'm not a social commentator from that perspective, but yeah, it has the potential to, you know, change things, you know, fairly rapidly. You know, it's, you know, what happens if, you know, the technology decides and says, oh, right, there's a power shortage at the moment, let's turn the power off to the hospital. Mm. It's not something that humans that we would perhaps do. Yeah, I mean, I think it has impacts across, you know, everything from that to kind of education. It's like, you know, if I, you know, you're writing a dissertation, you go, okay, write me a dissertation on this, you know, in 1,000 words or whatever. And, you know, although it's possible, it doesn't necessarily show the competence of the individual. So I think there's, you know, I think unleashing it kind of wholesale without any kind of controls on it is, yeah, we've seen that with ChatGPT, you know, where it's suddenly, yeah, you know, everyone's kind of playing with it, but what happens if it starts to become part of government systems? Then that starts to create a problem, right?
There is that. I must admit, like I say, I'm absolutely. I don't know. I have this. I just love using ChatGPT because I've shown people it and I've kind of gone, look, ask it a question. And you're just seeing this whole page of results coming up and it's scary, but it's amazing.
Yeah,
at the same time.
That's because it's all working on algorithms. Yes. You know, then, you know, it's, you know, where's the veracity of the data, even the underlying data? And I think there was an example, I can't remember it specifically, but yeah, it was basing the decisions off of data that was 10 years old. So where are the checks and balances in there? Mm. And obviously things change fairly quickly. And unless you go back and interrogate each of those data points and or the kind of decisioning that's gone on in order to create the output. Yeah, okay, yeah, computer says, you know, it's a bit like the, you know, Little Britain, the computer says that. And I think we've all probably had experiences like that in our life. And you go, well, it's just not right. But you know, but the computer says this.
Yeah.
But,
computer says no.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, in my mind, or at least what we do, you know, it provides a better basis for decision. It doesn't necessarily provide the decision. It still requires, you know, humans to interact with that, whether that's on our customer's side or whoever the end customer may be.
I was going to say, because human interpretation is obviously you're going to look at some data and look at it on from a human point of view, which is very different to the kind of like the very straight kind of understanding of machine learning or AI, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. No. Definitely. And yeah, I think we were talking about just before we started the record, but yeah, I think it's the context is everything. So yeah, something taken out of context or viewed through a different lens can mean that information or even the output of that information could be viewed very differently and go, okay, this looks good to me, but it doesn't look good for the other people because it may not be able to deal with that complexity, at least at the moment, of mashing together, you know, what two organizations' aspirations are. But so I think providing visibility of it, yeah, for example, if we were to select in EV charging site, you can look at that and you can look at all of the data that's gone into that and you go, okay, right, well, yeah, I'd rather it wasn't skewed in that way and therefore, yeah, it has to improve over time.
Mm. So you said to me before we started recording as well that you can use the AI data sets for cabling to, you know, to understand cabling for district network operators, et cetera, can't you?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the big things. And again, that's kind of a fragmented market. And yeah, probably 18 months ago, the DNOs were not keen on working with us. Now they're getting, you know, hundreds or thousands of connection requests a month. And they don't have the ability to deal with that throughput. They're now, yeah, happier to give us that data. But yeah, I've heard some horror stories recently about, yeah, someone putting in, yeah, 650 kilowatt chargers and there's only 200 kilowatts worth of power available. And you go, okay, right, well, you've just now put, yeah, and these assets are, yeah, probably 50K a pop.
Oh, God.
They've gone into the ground and you know, either they'll be throttled back and it'll be distributed load balance across the whole set, or, you know, it's just a waste of you know, assets as along the way. I mean, there's, yeah, you see people go, hey, I thought this was going to charge my car in 30 minutes. And because everyone's plugged in at the same time, there's just not the power available. So power availability is certainly, as far as the faster DC charging is concerned, is absolutely key.
So what will have gone wrong if that's happened? Has it just been an incorrect site survey that's been done? How's that managed to get through?
Yeah, I mean, they've hoped. I mean, ideally, our customers don't suffer that problem, but it's realistically just not enough. Due diligence. Mm-hmm. You know, there was someone that had spoken to me, and they said, "Oh, yeah, we've got this fantastic brownfield site, you know, next closer to Heathrow Airport." And you go, "Okay, great," but you know, you're looking at the traffic flow on this particular road, and you go, "Oh, it's a small B road, maybe not ideal." You know, on the face of it, it looks great. And then you go, okay, and it's, you know, a kilometre away from the nearest substation, and you're going to have to dig that. It's about £250 a metre to dig.
Cool.
So you kind of go, okay, right, well, this is not, you know, this is not viable, or, you know, or indeed feasible from the first instance. So, you know, if you're looking at, you know, hundreds or thousands of candidate sites, how do you take 500 to 50? You know, that's a kind of humanly manageable amount that you can then put an additional level of due diligence into. But if you're doing that, trying to do it with 500, it's just not possible. You're kind of, you know, you're kind of shooting in the dark or making unnecessary kind of rounding errors as far as that's concerned. Mm-hmm. So it shouldn't happen. But yeah, it does happen. Yeah, I think it's interesting, the public private kind of dynamic that certainly here in the UK that's going on at the moment. Yeah, there's a lot of public money available, and then you've got smaller private entities that are working on this, and yeah, that causes a disparity as well. But yeah, we're having to move quickly, and yeah, sometimes when you move quickly, the mistakes are made.
I was going to say, especially people don't mean to cut corners, and I don't mean cutting corners in a dangerous way, but I mean, you know, if you've got to push something through really, 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 really quickly, then it's possible that you might have missed something, you know, isn't it?
I mean, we look at the could, but we also look at the should. Mm. So, yeah, some kind of, is it going to serve the public? Is it going to serve businesses? But also, is it going to make the charge point operator, is it going to allow them to make money? And I'm not sure whether I entirely agree with it, but McKinsey said at the end of last year that 40% of charges going into the ground will never be profitable. Well, that's a scary number, and if I was in that business, I'd be kind of scared by it. So it's it's a waste of assets, and it's underservicing, and also gives the transition to EV a bad rap as well.
And I was going to say, because that was something else we were talking about before we started recording, wasn't it? Where we were saying about convincing other people, you know, and you know, making sure that the people who need to understand about kind of changing to an EV and the charging networks, et cetera, are kind of, they understand what they need to do.
I think it needs to be, I think if you look at consumer adoption of any new technology in the 20th century, whether it's kind of, you know, air conditioning, refrigeration, you know, color TVs, videos or whatever, you know, it follows an S curve where you've got, you know, early adopters, and that's realistically where we are now. Then it'll hit a much more, you know, vertical or near vertical, you know, growth profile. And, you know, that'll be when, you know, people really start to come on board. We've got some, you know, evangelists that believe in it and, you know, like the feeling of, you know, a car that accelerates in a straight line and you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, I think we're looking at about 3% penetration of EVs in the UK at the moment. And, you know, so we've got a long way to go. And the customer experience is essentially pretty rubbish. You know, I was talking to some guys earlier they're based in Germany, and you know, it's one of the big utilities there. If you were traveling around Europe, you need to have a separate app on your phone for each of the 7 geographies. And you know, the company will remain nameless, but you know, it's normal to cross borders there, and you go, okay, well, now I want to charge and I don't have this app. Well, that's not great experience.
No, but don't you think that's not so there's also lots and lots of different apps in the UK, isn't there? I mean I always say we're very close to getting an EV, but we haven't got one yet, but I've already collected about 10 apps on my phone.
Yes, yeah. I mean, there's a friend of mine, Neil Riddell, at a company called Power.
I know.
His mantra, you know, Neil, right? Yeah. Most people in the industry do. But, you know, Neil says that, you know, it has to be simple, so simple your grandmother can use it. And, you know, we're some distance away from that at this point. So, yeah, the level of customer experience, I think the early adopters are prepared to you know, take that off, you know, deal with the rough with the smooth. But you know, if we were to deal with this level of customer experience in a more mature industry like financial services or e-commerce, yeah, we just wouldn't find it acceptable. Yeah, it would be absolutely terrible. So there's a lot that needs to be done to help people on that adoption curve.
But do you know what? I'd liken it how it is at the moment to car parks. So council car parks or on-street parking. So I'll probably look on my phone now. Hang on a minute. How many parking apps have I actually got? I have got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. One of them isn't a parking app, so 2, 4. So I've got about 7 parking apps on my phone, you know, because I'll go to a council car park. It'll be run by, I probably shouldn't say all the names, but Ringo or Pay by Phone or somewhere like that, you know.
Are there other parking available?
There are other parking apps available if you need to download them. But do you know what I mean? It's kind of like when you go up to, there's one specifically in, and I don't know whether you know Tame at all, there's like a cattle market car park. If anybody's listening or watching, you know the Tame cattle market car park. It's one of those pay machines where, and bear in mind, I've worked in parking services years ago, but it's one of those pay machines where you have to put like a nifty 50 digits in. Oh, you know, you've got to try and work out for a start off what, you know, remember what your edge is. Now I'm pretty good. If it was my husband, he'd have no chance, you know, but then you've got to do all these other things and it doesn't really give you any idea about what you need to do next. So I've just downloaded the app because it makes it easier for me and I'd rather do that. So in some ways, I don't mind using an app, because I'm used to using it. As long as I've got a connection, I can, you know, I've got some kind of data that I can use, then it doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, I mean, I had a similar experience. It's, I was visiting a friend in Hackney, helping him move some stuff, and yeah, the London Borough of Hackney decided that it was a good idea of to charge me £7 an hour to park on the street. But took me, you know, best part of 20 minutes, and I'd like to think I'm reasonably technology savvy, although some of my colleagues might disagree with me. But, actually, if you think about that, it took me 20 minutes, and it's going, oh, great, that's cost me, you know, best part or over £2 to do that. Now, if I was charging as well, and I think that's one of the things that needs to be really considered, is like, where can you charge on public charging infrastructure where you're already spending time, whether it's kind of, you know, going for a swim, walking the dog, doing the shopping, whatever it might, what's the core function of being there, and then allow people to charge at the same time. At the moment, a lot of the time, you've got, you know, what we've just spoken about, which is the paying for the parking, and then you've got to pay for the charging as well. Yes. So there's another set of apps that, different car parking provider, different charge point operator, and then you go, okay, great, well, now it's taking me 40 minutes to do this. You know, it's like, you know, it's ridiculous. So I think that ease of use, and we're having a number of conversations at the moment. It's like, you know, just turn up, put your credit card on the contactless thing, you're parking, how long do you want to park for? Yeah, ideally it recognizes, you know, who you are from your card, and then, you know, on a digital screen says, are you charging as well? Yes. Done. Yeah, and I think it has to be that simple. And we're some distance away from it at the moment, unfortunately. But yeah, I think as the market adopts more, then the consumers will demand, and businesses arguably, because for businesses, time is money. So.
And I mean, so for example, this little car park, there's probably 150 spaces in there, so it's not massive, but it's, you know, it's of a considerable enough size, and. And not everybody's going to want to charge when they're there.
No.
But at some point in the future, there will be probably maybe a third or half of people that will want to charge there.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think that, you know, when I just said the could, the should, and the when, it's like the when is like, how, when do you roll it out? And it's a problem that we're kind of grappling with at the moment, is how do you size something? You know, if there's 150 spaces, how many of them should be have EV charging bays now? You know, it's like a hotel. You know, there's obviously different speeds of chargers, and it tends to be the faster DC ones and much more expensive pieces of hardware. And so think about a hotel. Yeah, some people will go in there to have a meal. Yeah, or a meeting. Other people there are staying there overnight. So you've got to have the right blend of infrastructure to do that. And that, you know, it's a conversation I was having on Friday at the Fully Charged North show, and just trying to understand this. How do you include this, the charging with the core function that's already there? I mean, I think there will be times when people are en route and like on Friday, and actually I took my don't tell anyone this, but I took my ICE on Friday. But it was because I was driving 500 miles in the day, I was going to be driving for 9 hours anyway. The fully charged event, note to the organisers for next year, there's no EV charging on site. So it would have been nice if my car had been fully charged when I was leaving and going home. But, it was 500 miles. It's like I didn't really want to, have to stop for 2 hours and maybe queue up at the service station or those kinds of things. So we're still not at the true level. And that's an extraordinary journey. Yeah, most weeks I drive less than 100 kilometres, so that's okay, right? Yeah. But there are times where you want to do these journeys and, And I think that's one of the reasons why, EVs will often still tend to be a second car in a household, where people still have that ability to pretty much have, indefinite range, you can just put the thing in the tank and off you go.
But things are going to change, aren't they, Chris, over the next few years? We're going to, I've said this to loads of people, if you think back to kind of the days of the massive big mobile phone, I used to have this guy that I worked for, and he had this massive big, it was the size of a suitcase, mobile. It wasn't really mobile phone, because he'd be like, struggling along with it, it was so heavy.
Going to the gym, though, if you've got to carry that around.
Oh, we used to call him Cornish pasty shoes, but that's another story. So he'd be there, with his phone and thinking he was really like, hey, I'm so cocksure of myself. And look how we've changed now. So, I mean, I know that's a number of years away, but we are going to be looking at different size batteries, longer range, better capabilities. It's got to be happening, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some other kind of macro trends as far as the car ownership is concerned. I mean, it's close to 80% of the people in the UK will never buy a new car throughout their whole lifetime.
I'm one of them.
So, you know, until there's a residual market, and, you know, the idea of, you know, people that, you know, I think there's 7.2 million people in this country that are living in, you know, some kind of fuel poverty at the moment. And, you know, the idea, if you said, oh, yeah, and you're going to buy a, you know, a £50,000 Tesla, well, that's not happening. And, you know, and then there's other things that kind of, I think, you know, in my mind, play into that. The traditional route to the market for the automotive OEMs, of, you know, where they, you know, people buy cars because you've got some level of certainty what the residual value is going to be in, you know, 3 years or 5 years' time or whatever it may be. And the route, that route to market of getting used cars on the market quickly has been through the rental car companies. Well, in no meaningful way are the rental car companies buying those vehicles from the OEMs at the moment. So, you know, I think I was lucky enough to go to Sicily a few weeks ago, and, you know, it was, you know, I think for the first time ever that I was offered an EV, but I also kind of know what it's like that from a charging infrastructure perspective in Sicily, and yeah, I didn't opt for that option. So, but I think it's something that will become normal. You know, booking.com, I think, now started giving, you know, when you select a hotel, you know, whereas years gone past, I might have wanted Kids Club, so that I got some peace and quiet for a couple of hours.
Yeah, but I
now,
know that one.
You know, has the site got EV charging? And I think that kind of thing, that demand of saying, okay, we're losing customers, we're not attracting the right demographic, because we're not offering this. So, yeah, I think we're beginning to see it happen.
Yeah, I was going to say Airbnb's got the same. I noticed that a few months ago that Airbnb will actually say, well, you know, you've got an option, do you need EV charging? And bizarrely enough, we stayed in Pembrokeshire over Easter, and there were two charge points in the in kind of like the car park of the place where we were staying.
Because they know that they're going to attract someone that could afford to buy, yeah.
But we didn't have an EV then. That's the irony, isn't it? It's ridiculous. But at least I know if we go back and we've got an EV, then we'll be at a charge.
Yeah. I mean, and the likelihood is you will go back there when you've got an EV, because that'll allow, yeah, you know that it's going to be convenient. So you're more likely to rebook. So I think it's becoming much more normal now, without a doubt.
Yeah, yeah. So going back to your e-mobility solution then, so who are your main customers?
So we've chosen to work mostly with the charge point operators. I mean, because we're a small company, we're only about 25 people. So, yeah, we're not huge at the moment. And I think some of the sales cycles with the local authorities can be long. Yeah, they want to know, you know, everything about your company. And probably we don't hit all of those kind of due diligence targets. You know, they may, although we think we're very good at what we do, they might perceive us as being a risk. So we chose to work with the commercial entities. Yeah, many of whom were kind of startups in the first instance. You know, I mentioned Iduna, but, you know, I think our second customer was Connected Curve that we spoke about earlier as well. Yeah, and we first started working with them. They were, 14 people, very co-founder, energetically led, and now they're 120. Mm-hmm. You know, they received, you know, 100 million in funding from Aviva last year. So, you know, there's, yeah, it's starting to become kind of grown up, if you want. So we work mostly with charge point operators, but that line is kind of blurring now as well, because, you know, a hotel could be a quasi charge point operator or CPO as a service working with them, because they want to increase, yeah, footfall, they want to increase dwell time, they want to increase average spend if they're build the charger where it's already there. But we're already beginning to see it where, you know, the oil and gas companies that received a lot of, you know, money with the kind of the energy reef windfall last year, so they've got, yeah, plenty of money to spend. I think, yeah, although they may be continuing to sweat their kind of assets, they know that they're going to have to change it at some point. They will do. And also the utilities companies are starting to become involved as well. So I think it's become you know, sufficiently large now and is, you know, in my mind at least, very, very likely to happen. You know, there's still things like hydrogen, which in my mind has some challenges as well. But, you know, I think it's incredibly likely to happen. And, you know, they're now saying, okay, right, well, we need to start investing in this. And I think probably in 20 years' time, it'll be same as the, you know, the oil and gas majors now will. Yeah, it'll be, yeah, dozens rather than hundreds.
Mm, exactly. So when you work with the CPO, then when do you start working with them, and when would you finish working with them on a project?
So the platform that we provide is web based. It's persistent. It tends to be, yeah, we're going to work with them and evolve over that period of time. So, yeah, the customers that we acquired 2 or 3 years ago, they're still customers. They'll probably still be customers in 5 years' mm-hmm. time, although mm-hmm. we'll have other kind of add-ons to what we do. So I think that, yeah, the EV charging infrastructure space will not peak until about 2045, based on our estimates. There's a lot of other geographies, you know, that are slower to adopt and adapt, basically. Mm-hmm. Some of the mm-hmm. What's going to happen in sub-Saharan Africa? What will happen in the Indian subcontinent? Yeah, I think that the average vehicle age, say in India, is I don't know exactly what it is, but I'm guessing that vehicles, looking at the black smoke that comes out the back end of the trucks, mm. I mean, I guess most of them are probably 15, maybe 20 years old. And it may be, there were some guys that have been trying to help in Uganda, it's kind of a vanity project, but we're trying to help them, as much as we can. But yeah, the air quality in some of these places is really, really not great. So will they skip an evolutionary step? Yeah, they never really had fixed line telephony and went straight to mobile. Will they go to, e-bikes or e-scooters, that kind of, cleaner form of individual mobility? And, not everyone, the vast majority of people don't own a vehicle in those geographies. So it'd be interesting to see how that pans out. Once they make that decision, if it makes sense for them, I think they'll, just go ahead and do it.
Yeah, exactly. And you were saying to me before, weren't you, about you kind of supporting... So the organisations have got commercial vehicle return to home fleets as well.
In general, the high usage vehicles, range, is still somewhat limited. But how do you get these high usage vehicles to adopt, whether it's kind of private hire vehicles, the Ubers, the Lyfts, those kind of things, or the light commercial vehicles that are returned to home? I heard a horror story in the US recently where, the guy was, his vehicle used to take it home at night, couldn't take it home at night anymore, had to go back to the depot. And then he had an hour and a half commute from the depot and to get to the depot in the morning. So, it doesn't happen in every instance, but I think, in general, it's put the charging assets at places where it's likely to be convenient. Certainly in the US, and I know we touched upon that when we first started speaking, but they're behind us at the moment. There's a lot of public money available through the NEVI, the National EV Infrastructure, and also the CFI for the fuels, but. The municipalities there seem to be taking a greater level of interest. Most of the money is federal that the states then need to apply for, but they seem to have taken a much more proactive approach on social inclusion, which I think is probably the right thing. Where areas that are already disadvantaged don't become more disadvantaged, and I think that we don't polarize society even more than it already is.
I saw on your LinkedIn feed you had an article on there about greenwashing, and I just wanted to know what your thoughts were.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I think that the whole kind of badging as sustainability is is a tricky thing. Yeah, I think, yeah, carbon offsetting and, you know, the kind of the veracity of that kind of carbon offsetting. And yeah, there's some guys that we've been partnering with, or actually they're part of the same cohort that we're in for, you know, in the US through Innovate UK. But yeah, they're saying, yeah, not all carbon credits are created equal. You know, it's like, okay, where are you planting the trees? You know, is it going to kind of, you know, is it not going to help? Yeah, I think there was, yeah, there was a government, a UK government initiative that I kind of skimmed an article at the weekend, and they said, oh, the UK's kind of, you know, reforestation policy, you know, it's great and it's this and that. And it turns out that they've, you know, planted trees in the area equivalent to Regent's Park. And that's really kind of not doing, not making a huge amount of difference. So, you know, I think it's important. Yeah, people have, yeah, marketing departments in large corporates, especially some of those that are perhaps most guilty, you know, of kind of, yeah, certainly magnifying a small kind of, you know, sustainable, you know, policy within their organization and kind of sweeping everything else under the carpet, which is not right. I won't name any names, but because I won't try and avoid the lawsuit. But yeah,
let's leave that where it is. So finally, where, if people want to find you or want to check out Dodona, what do they need to do?
Yeah, so I mean, reach out to me on LinkedIn. So, you know, I don't think there's probably not too many Chris Chamberlain. So you can search for me on there. Just drop me a connection note and a note with that. Yeah, you can pretty much connect with anyone. So yeah, I'll accept the invite. Yeah, and then we can take it from there. You can visit our website, but it's like the cobbler's children with wearing shoes with holes in. And yeah, technology companies tend to have some of the worst websites. And I honestly don't think that really serves its purpose. I think, you know, realistically, this is also a journey that we're all on, and it's a dialogue, and it's not one size fits all. So yeah, let's discuss. Reach out to me. Yeah, happy to have a discussion.
Have a conversation. Yeah, have definitely. A conversation. Brilliant. Well, listen, thank you, Chris. Thank You've you. Been an absolute star. Much appreciated. And yes, we did manage to talk quite a lot, didn't we?
Well, time already.
Yeah, sorry. But listen, I really appreciate your time. It's been likewise. Lovely talking thank you. To you. All right. And to likewise. Everybody else, right. I'm going to say
cheers, bye.
Thanks a lot. See you later, everyone. Bye. Cheers. Thanks for listening to Electric Evolution with Liz Allen. If you want to find out more about Full Circle Continuous Improvement, please visit us at www.fullcircleci.co.uk. Don't forget to keep listening for more episodes coming up really soon.